Good morning. We are learning Shmuel Beis. We are in the 15th chapter, Perek Tes Vav. We're going to begin with Pasuk Lamed Aleph. We will finish today. You should have two packets in front of you. We are going to see a very unusual... There should be two different packets there. If not, I apologize. Page 304, yes. But I also put something which looks like this. It's a three-page packet, which is actually photocopied from a Gemara, which we are going to be learning a very unusual Talmudic piece when we get to it, when we see the Pasuk, which is immediately after Pasuk Lamed Aleph. But just to recap, let us see Pasuk Lamed Aleph inside, and then afterwards we'll discuss what's happening in this very tragic chapter. V'David higin lemor, achitofel bekoshrim im avshalom. So, which is on page 304, that a higin, someone told David that Achitofel was among the individuals who were together with Avshalom. They were koshrim, that he was like one knot connected in cahoots with Avshalom, his son, who wished to kill him. In this particular pasuk, we see clearly that it wasn't just Avshalom that was trying to pursue after his father David to kill him, but also Achitofel, who was at one point David's loyal advisor, in which in this situation we see clearly that he rebels against the king. Vayomer David sakel noes atzas Achitofel Hashem. So David turns to Hashem, his mispalel, he prays, and we are going to see the greatness of David is that when he davens, he's immediately answered. And we're going to see that at the end of our chapter, which we'll see today.
It's very strange to me, that pasuk. Vayomer David atzakel noes atzas Achitofel Hashem. Why does it say Vayomer David Hashem?
He's apparently that's what it sounds like. It seems like he's engaged in prayer. Pasuk Lamed Aleph, verse 31, page 304. Does everyone have the right packet? Did I give out the right one? Oh, good. Okay, just checking. It should say. This is the last sentence, by the way, on page 304. You feel it should maybe say Vayomer David Hashem?
Yeah.
Okay.
He does, he's saying it to Hashem. It says Vayomer David. So can I not set up with Hashem?
The question that's being asked is maybe it should say Vayomer David La Hashem. Why is it? Yeah. So it's a valid point. It's a very valid point. We may be able to give an answer to that question when we really dissect this Gemara, which we'll see in a moment. But apparently, it almost seems like he's very distant from God. That he doesn't. It's not Vayomer David Hashem. So we'll see that perhaps there's a reason why he's so distant from Hashem at this particular point, which we'll see in the commentators shortly. Okay. So with that said, we concluded with the idea that it wasn't Avshalom and his idea to kill his father. Avshalom was interested in going to Hebron, which, as we said, was a big city. However, David could remain king, and Avshalom would also have a little portion, a piece of the pie, if you will. But that David would remain the king. Avshalom would never have overthrown his father, killed, except that Achitofel was the one who was really the brains of the operation that tried to convince Avshalom kill David.
It's a plot.
Right. Right. It's the English. That's how the English translates it. You're absolutely right. Those who conspire. Right. That's right.
Where is that?
That's the English translation of the word bakoshrim. Right. And the way the Masudas Sion translates Bekoshim is Ben Agudat Hamordim. So you have an Aguda, you do have this group that's together. Their purpose is to rebel.
Was Ahitophel with David previously?
Ahitophel was the advisor of David, and
So why did he turn?
So the commentators explain that Ahitophel really always had his eye on the throne himself personally, and he knew that there was no way he could overthrow David as powerful as he was, but maybe he can get Avshalom to kill this. So he took little baby steps. He'd have Avshalom kill David, and then everyone would look at Avshalom and say, what type of person is this? And it would be easier to overthrow Avshalom, Ahitophel felt, than to overthrow David. And it certainly is quite true. So therefore, that's how some of the Mefarshim explain that Ahitophel, his whole intention was just for his own benefit and his own sake. Okay, now we're going to get into the pasuk, which we're going to spend the majority of today discussing, but we are going to finish the parak nonetheless. Pasuk Lamed Beis. Vayehi David ba ad harosh. So David went until the rosh, until the head. Rashi says what it means, the rosh. We're going to see the Gemara has a very unusual interpretation of what the word rosh, head, means. Rashi, which I did not underline, says ad resh turi, which is the head or the top or the summit of a mountain. So David was ascending and he came to the top of a mountain. Asher yishtachaveh sham l'elokim. And there, he would bow down there to Hashem. At that precise moment was Hushai, which we're going to see in the very last pasuk in this parak, pasuk Lam Zayin, that Hushai was a Reya, was a very, very close friend of David, that would be willing to do anything that David asks him to do. And we're going to see what David asks him to do later on in this parak. But nonetheless, we again see clearly that immediately after he davens, he's immediately answered. He asked Hashem that he should be spared from Ahitophel. He's immediately answered by coming across a very, very close friend of his, someone that he can trust very well, namely the name of Hushai Harki. And Karua Kutanto Vadama Al Rosho. So Hushai was also in mourning. He was also in sorrow for what was happening to his dear friend David. And his garments were rended, his tunic was torn, as it says here, Yadama Rosho, and he had dirt upon his head. So we look in Rashi. Rashi continues in this pasuk and says, just a very simple explanation. He was bowing down, it says he was bowing down to Elohim, to Hashem, seemingly doing the right thing. Says Rashi, Asher Hoy Ragil Lishtachvos Sham Kishayaba Lirushalayim. David used to always prostrate himself in this particular place whenever he was going to Yerushalayim. Hayiroa Misham es ha'ohel sheha'aron besocho v'ayim shtachavah. So he would see over there the ohel, the tent of meeting, and the aron which was within it, in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Holy of Holies, and he would bow down. So because he was so high up, he had a very good view. Right. So he was able to see the Mishkan, or as it's the Ohel, the tent of meeting, the Ohel Moed. So when he had the opportunity to see it, he immediately bowed down. And yes, the Radak actually makes this point when it says Ad HaRosh, the very first line in the Radak says Rosh Hazetim, the very head of Mount Olives. And if you skip a few lines down, the Asakain, he does this, says the Radak, the Fi Shahoya Nifran Mimakom Hamikdash. He was now, as we know, running away from Yerushalayim. He's no longer in Yerushalayim. He's running away from where the Aron was, because remember, the Aron came with him, but he sent the Aron back with the new Kohen Gadol. V'lo ha'yode im yoshub od. He didn't know, will I ever go back to Yerushalayim? Will I ever make it back to this place? And therefore, ka'adam lokeach rishus mi'ohavav b'galuso. Just like a person who takes rishus, someone who gives greeting from someone he loves as he is being exiled, so was the pain that David was feeling, knowing that he may never have the opportunity to return back to the place that he loves so dearly, to Yerushalayim. Now it's brought down, interestingly, over here in Halacha, before we get into the Gemara. It's brought down in various Likutim, different sources, Kishadam bol Yerushalayim. When a person goes to Jerusalem, V'ra'a es hakuva shel Beis HaMikdash, she azara, and you see the place where the Beit HaMikdash stood, Os chayev l'shtachavos kenegda. You're obligated to bow down opposite it. And he brings this down in the name of the Mishnah Berurah, because what do we see? That's what David did. When David had the opportunity to see that place, he would bow down. So therefore, some derive that David wasn't just doing something nice, but he was doing something according to the law, according to Halacha. And therefore, he felt it was necessary that we also should bow down. Now, all of this is saying something very nice, warm, and fuzzy about David, that he was doing something good. However, if we look at this other packet over here, which again is the Gemara, but I took the liberty of making copies of the Art Scroll Gemara. This is in the last chapter in Tractate Sanhedrin on 107a4. If you see, there's a part, about two-thirds of it is notes. That's not the Gemara, that's not the Talmud. The Talmud in the English, this is like an art scroll, is on the top third, if you will. And I'm looking in the left column, it's split into two columns. Toward the end of the left column, the Omer Rav Yehuda Omer Rav. Not sure if anyone sees this. And Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Rav, I'm going to just read it the way it's said here. Bikesh David la'avod avodah zarah. What does that mean? When Avshalom rebelled, this is a Gemara. It's not, I didn't just type this up while you were saying Tehillim. Right, this is from the Gemara. The Gemara says that when Avshalom rebelled, David sought to engage in idolatry. He wanted to worship idols. We're dealing with David. David, the great king, the great chassid, the great tzaddik. How do we know this? So remember I told you that the word Rosh, Rashi just translates the summit of the mountain. The Gemara has a completely different and very novel interpretation. Shene Amar, Vayhi David ba ad harosh, asher yishtachav sham le'elokim. Now this is the pasuk that we just read. The Talmud is quoting this sentence and translates it in a very different way. It says that when David was coming to the Rosh, the summit, where he used to bow down to God. Now the word Rosh could have more than just one meaning. It doesn't just have to mean the summit. The Talmud says in Rosh el avodah zarah. Now when it says the word Rosh, it's referring to idol worship. And if we look on the right column, Shina Amar, it quotes a verse that to support that sometimes idol worship is under the category of the word Rosh, as it says, this is the very top right corner. One was on our new packet. Kutsalma reishe di dahav tav. So it says the image, its head, its Rosh, was of fine gold. And that is referring to the worship of Avodah Zarah, of idol worship. So, according to this piece of Gemara, this Talmudic piece, this is saying that David wished to worship idols, and that there is certain dialogue which we do not see in the sentence that we saw that the Gemara kind of fills in. Continues in the Gemara, V'hine l'krosu chushai ha'arki karua kutanto v'edem al-rosho. So we mentioned at the end of verse 32 that his very dear friend, Hushai, the Arki, he came and he had his garments ripped and he had earth upon his head, which logically, as we said, is because he was mourning the fact that David was having to run away from his son Avshalom. So the Gemara says like this, Amalullah David, so Hushai said to his friend David, Yomru Melech Shekamotcha Yavod Avodah Zarah. How could you do this? How could you, David, commit this act, people will say, how can a king as great as you engage in idol worship? You would have violated a sin. It's unbelievable. This is what the Gemara is saying. The Gemara is saying that David wished to worship idols, which is hard to understand. Why would David want to do that? He was a good person. Why would he want to do one of the worst sins imaginable? To the point that his friend has to bail him out and say, what will people say if they find out that you, great David HaMelech, King David, that you're going to be worshiping an idol? So Omer Lo, so the Gemara says, Melech Shekamoti Yargenu Beno. So let's just read it in English. If I do not do this, people will say that it is unjust that a king as pious as I should be killed by his own son. Thus God's name will be desecrated publicly. Thank you. So what does he say? Unbelievable sentence. Mutov Yavod Avodazara, better that I should worship idols. The Ali is Chalil Shem Shemayim Befar Hesia, and not to desecrate God's name in public. So what is all this, what is really being said over here? The simple explanation is that David didn't want to worship an idol. David would never have been Ovid of Adazar. He was a tzaddik, he was a great person. So if he was such a great tzaddik, why is he being worshiping an idol? Because he was so concerned about people, what would they say? What would they say that David, who does everything right in his life, all of a sudden, his son is chasing after to kill him. People, and let's say he is killed successfully. His son, Avshalom, kills David. So people are going to look at it and say, what's the whole point of this whole religious business? There's no one greater on the face of this earth than King David, and yet he was murdered by his own son? Why should I take part in this religion? So therefore, let me just finish this, then I'll listen to your heads that are shaking. That David felt better that I should be an idol worshiper, even though I don't want to be an idol worshiper. I'm just going to go through the motions so that people say, okay, David really deserved to be killed. He was a wicked person. He was really not a person to look up to. And therefore, the fact that he was killed is because he did something wrong. So this way, David felt that would be a way to remove the issue of Chil Hashem, of desecrating God's name publicly. Go ahead.
I don't understand how they get to this conclusion. He's worshiping an idol in order to protect his son from the sin of killing his father just because he wants to be king.
Why would David be killed? It doesn't make sense. David was such a good person. Why would his own son kill him? So you would think, God is not just. Religion is not just. And people would...
And doing this makes God just.
Hey, this was a... David was a sinner. He was a terrible sinner. He was an idol worshiper. He did the worst things imaginable.
God is a sinner.
This is the justification.
But how do you get, how does the Gemara come up with, how and why? We're protecting Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov and so on, and they can do no wrong, even though they do wrong. The Gemara finds reason why they do, why the wrong that they're doing is really right. And all of a sudden you take David and the Tehillim, and you said that he went to sin to be an idol worshiper?
He was thinking maybe I should do a horrendous crime so that people think I'm a bad person. So when I'm killed, because I'm going to be my son's going to kill me, so at least let me die as a sinner. This way people will not think badly about God. But still, why would God? But there's a concept. You're right. There's a concept of free will. But why would God allow? And this gets a little bit deep over here. But on the level of David, why would God allow David to be killed? That's what the Gemara says. This is what the Talmud says. This is an interpretation that the Talmud says. I mean, this is...
Is it an accepted God?
Of course. There's no one that says that this is not a possible interpretation. Clearly, it's not the most simplistic, but I'm sharing with you an approach, which many of the commentators grapple over. Now, before we move forward where his friend asks him a question, there's a couple of ideas taking this Gemara for what it says that we find, again, we see the tremendous mysterious nefesh. The greatness of David is that he is willing to give of his own life and to humiliate himself for all future generations for the sake of God. The ultimate level of mesiras nefesh, not only my life will be taken away, but that people will think I'm a terrible person when really he wasn't a bad person.
But this is the man who did not defend his daughter. Isn't it more... And he defended his son and not his daughter by not saying that his son was wrong with the chilul Hashem.
True, and that's...
For him, it's okay.
What you're saying is a good point, because the reason why he is getting punished is because he really did deserve for what he did wrong, right? With when his daughter was defiled, and he didn't protest or do really anything proactive.
That makes him human.
He deserved a punishment, but not everyone would realize that. Not everyone knows that he deserves a punishment for that.
When she screams and she comes out with ashes and she's coming out loudly.
Correct. They knew what happened. They certainly knew the incident.
But he didn't do anything about it. So that's the same man who's now going to do Avodah Zarah to protect.
That's more of a, but it's more open that everyone will know that he definitely deserves to be punished. That's the idea. That's what the Gemara says. So anyway, just to focus on this just for another moment, Rav Yosef Salant says, this is what the Gemara says. This is, I'm quoting, I'm not making this up. It's thought-provoking, I think. But nonetheless, based on this, we can derive what is the worst sin in the world. So most people would say, well, there's three cardinal sins that you have an obligation. Yaharog Val Yavor. That if someone tells you to commit one of three sins or die, you are not allowed to commit those sins, namely, Gilirayas, Avodah Zarah, Shvichas Damim, adultery, idol worship, and murder. Those are the three worst things. So if someone comes up to you and says, kill this person or I'm going to kill you, you do not have the right to take that person's life. Doesn't mean you shouldn't defend yourself, obviously. But if it's beyond your control, and that's your only choice, you are not allowed to take someone's life so that you can live. Because we do not say that anyone's life is more valuable than the others. You have no right to think that you are more important than another person. So it's also when it comes to these other sins of idol worship and adultery of Gilirayas. Now, the question is, how about Chil Hashem? Desecrating of God's name. So, Rabbi Yosef Salant learns out from this Gemara, which you may not like the Gemara, but the Gemara is there, that David feels that it's better for me to worship an idol than Chil Hashem, than to desecrate God's name. That's what we read in the Talmud. Whether you wish to accept that as the most simplistic explanation. What's one saying? So
where is he desecrating Hashem's name here?
No, he felt. You're right. I'm going to get to that. You're right. But what David at this point, when he was making the statement to his friend, he was saying, it's better that I should worship an idol than to desecrate God's name. Why would I desecrate God's name? By being a tzaddik and everyone thinking I'm a tzaddik and being killed. And then people would say, what type of God is this? So instead, better that I should worship an idol than have a Chil Hashem than to desecrate God's name.
Reason to be killed. So according to that, he should give himself a reason.
give right. So this way, people. So Achil Hashem will not be created because people say, "Ah, David, he deserved to be killed." Okay, but according to this, Rabbi Yosef Salant explains that it's clear, based on what David is saying, that the worst sin is not murder, it's not idol worship, and it's not adultery. It's Chil Hashem. Because that's what David says. Better that I should even be an idol worshiper than that God's name should be disgraced. Now, Hushai Ha'arki responds and said, as we read in the Gemara, that he said, Yomru Melech Shekamotcha Yavod Avodah Zarah. If you commit this act, people will say, how can a king as great as you engage in idolatry? So in other words, what he was answering him was, you're trying to worship an idol so as to avoid Chil Hashem. No. By you worshiping an idol, you're creating a bigger Chil Hashem. Because people will look at you and they'll say, if David, this great man, this tzaddik, this chassid, he is an individual that worships an idol, what do you expect from me? How could I could be? I'm not going to be any better than that. I'm also going to worship idols. I'm also going to be a great sinner. A big sinner. And therefore, what Hushai Ha'arki was saying was, if you worship an idol, that doesn't mean there's no Chil Hashem. It creates also a Chil Hashem. And therefore, don't worship an idol. Okay. Now, what exactly does this mean? Does it really mean that he wishes to worship an idol? Obviously, that's pretty hard to imagine. Now, there is another unusual Gemara, which is not in front of us. But the Gemara tells us that... There's a Gemara that the Marsha actually says, and I think this is what's brought down in the English down here in this other packet. This is not in your packet, but I'm just going to read these two sentences. Shavadai kavanas David hoysel latseis me'eretz Yisrael. We know that he was running away. It's in the English. That David's intention was he was leaving Yerushalayim. He was leaving Israel. Shitachas memshelos HaKadosh Baruch Hu ba'atzmo. Eretz Yisrael has a greater level of sanctity and kedusha and purity. And by distancing yourself from it and going into Chutz La'aretz, you're distancing yourself from God. So much so that the Talmud says, Shekol hador b'chutz la'aretz. And of course, this sentence also needs tremendous work. Dome kemi she'ein lo eloka. Someone who lives outside of Israel, dome, it's comparable, kemi she'ein lo eloka. Like a person who does not have a God. Someone who does not have God in their life. It doesn't mean you people in Eretz Israel, all of them are the biggest tzaddikim. And it doesn't mean the people in Chutz La'aretz are so bad. But certainly, there's an element of sanctity in Kedusha that is lacking in Chutz La'aretz and the diaspora, which is there in Israel. And therefore, what David was... And not only that, the Talmud says... Ki hador b'chutz la'aretz ki'ilu oved avodah zarah. It's like you are an idol worshiper. Someone who lives outside of Israel, it's like you've worshipped idols. This is what the Gemara says. It doesn't mean I'm an idol worshiper because I'm living in Bell Harbor, but what it means is that you have made a choice, maybe, to say I am not interested in being as close to God as I could, and therefore I'm going to live outside of Israel, as though to run away from the palace. I'd rather be away from the king's glory and hide from it. So therefore, this is what David was saying. David really wasn't going to worship an idol. But David was saying, I now am leaving Israel, and therefore it is as though I am an idol worshiper because I no longer have that same intense relationship with God as I used to.
Because if you don't follow God's rules, you go into galut. Oh. Whether it's a willing galut or galut.
Right.
Being in galut is a punishment.
Yeah. So that's certainly... that could be why it's considered like that. Yeah. And this is part of his punishment, that he has to run away from Yerushalayim, he has to run away from Israel, so he's losing that connection to God.
And he's doing this because in the event that his son kills him, he doesn't want his son to look like a murderer?
So he doesn't want one Pumbaa.
Possibly. Possibly, yeah. Maybe.
It's
one Pumbaa. It seems like it's the perception of what other people will interpret. Okay. All right. If we continue in the Gemara, this packet, which we saw, this man, Hushai, continues and says to David, he asks him a question. My taima k'netzivat yifat toar. Why did you marry a beautiful captive? A yifas toar in Parshas Ki Tetzeh says, if you're out in war, so you can take, there's this idea of taking yifas toar, which there's very specific laws in which David, King David did. Armalei, if we see on the next page, yifas toar rachman asharia. The Torah permits it. What do you mean, why did I do it? There's nothing wrong with what I did. So Amrlei, so he responded, Lo darsh tzmuchim. The samachle kiel ish ben sar more. Kol nosi yifat toar yishol ben sar amore. What he was telling him was, you kind of brought it upon yourself. Because since you married a yifas toar, the Torah says you're allowed to, correct. But as we explained before, the juxtaposition of a person who has such a relationship, and that the whole focus is merely physical, when the physical goes away and you have different ideologies, so that child is going to end up being brought up in a home with mixed messages, ultimately they're going to end up becoming a Ben Sarmar rebellious and wayward child. And with that said, what his friend Hushai is telling him was, it's no one else to blame except for yourself. The fact that you're running away, it's your fault. Because you should never have married the Yifas Toar. Aye, there's nothing wrong with marrying the Yifas Toar, but there are consequences. Even though the Torah does permit it, that doesn't necessarily mean that that's what you should have done. And therefore, ultimately, this is why this is the downfall of what you did. Okay. So that's what the interpretation that's brought down in the Gemara. Okay. With that said, let us move on in these sentences so that we'll be able to finish this chapter today. Okay. So, you can look at this packet. This is a Gemara, and again, it's certainly questionable. What does it mean that he went to worship idols? We're now at the pasuk Lamed Gimel. V'yomer lo David. So David said, or verse 33. That David said to him, to his friend, Imavarta iti, if you come with me, if you pass over with me, Bahisa Olai Lamasa, it'll be a burden to me. What does that mean? A burden. So what? He's just walking along. Why is it such a big deal? So if you look at the Masudas David in Pasuk Lamed Gimel, Lamasa, a masa almost sounds like you're carrying something which is heavy that you're putting on your shoulders. The Masudas David says, Lamasa means, Al hayoysen zakin v'kaychotosh. Even though David was very good friends with this man, clearly David was the younger of the two, because what David was saying, which might not have been very nice, but he was just being very honest, was, Hushai, if you would come, you're an older person, kochotosh, you're weak, you don't have the physical strength to run around like I'm doing. And what ends up happening is, Lamasi Yechashim Aholichim, I'm going to have to actually end up physically carrying you and pushing you and assisting you because you won't be able to keep up. So it's certainly in your best interest not to hang out with me, especially that my life is in jeopardy. Pasuk Amadala, V'im Ha'ir Tashu. However, if you will go back to the city, of course, that's referring to Shalayim. So if you go back to the city, V'yamarta l'Avshalom Avdecha, and you should say to Avshalom, Avdecha ani hamelech eyeh, Eved avicha v'ani me'oz v'yata v'ani avdecha. You should go up to him and say, that it's true that I was the servant of your father, but that's only up until now. V'yata, however, now, ani avdecha, I'm going to be your servant. So even though, of course, Hushai would never really wish to make such a statement, because Hushai really sided with David. But nonetheless, David is asking him for a huge favor, to please go to Avshalom and to give the impression, the perception, that in fact he is siding with him, with Avshalom. And we'll see that, obviously, almost like as a spy, And by you doing this, you'll be able to nullify Achitophel's counsel for me. Very interesting. Again, it's not Avshalom. Avshalom is almost like, he's not innocent, but he certainly did not have the desire to harm David as Achitophel did. So he said, Hushai, if you do me a favor, go back and pose as though you're an ally to Avshalom, and this way you'll be able to be privy to certain conversations which I won't be able to hear. And this way I'll be able to find out what's going on. So that's what he was asking, to kind of find out what was happening. Okay. V'alo imcha sham tzadok ve'avyasar ha'kohanim. So he says that not only that, but there are other people that are going to be, that are with you, including the previous Kohen Gadol and the current Kohen Gadol, tzadok and avyasar. V'hoye kol davar asher tishma b'meis ha'melech, anything that you hear from the king, tagid l'tzadok l'avyasar kohanim. You'll be able to inform these two people. So again, David is already calling his son Avshalom king. Not only that, it's not like you're going to be alone, because even with them are two of their sons, namely Achimaatz, who is the child of Tzadok, the Yonasan, who is Le'avyasar, who is the son of Le'avyasar. And again, you'll be able to send all these messages over through their with their assistance. V'yabuchushai reye David ha'ir. So Hushai, who was David's friend, obviously again as a spy, as you said, went to the city. V'avshalom yabu Yerushalayim. And Avshalom at this time was going through Yerushalayim. Of course, he was going from Hebron to Yerushalayim in order to be able to take over the position of Melech completely. And hopefully, Hushai will be able to find out some information so as to inform David, so he'll be able to not only protect himself, but ultimately, hopefully, get back the throne before it's too late.
Why does it say for Hushai that he goes into Ha'il, Avshalom, and Yerushalayim? Why is it not Hushai to Yerushalayim and Avshalom to Yerushalayim?
Okay, good question.
I couldn't find it.
Maybe because it signifies that Hushai was going in sort of clandestinely, even though his purpose was clandestine. So they said Ha'ir instead of Yerushalayim, and Avshalom was going in like a melech, so they said Yerushalayim.
That's a nice answer. That's a very good answer. Yeah, that's very good.
But he's going
knowing
that he's going to
Ha'ir.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, but it's a clandestine purpose. Only he knows it.
Why
he's going into the city. People don't realize what he's really there for.
That's a good answer.
I don't know. If David is the king, why is he running away? Why can't he?
It's a problem.
Well, one of the things that were mentioned in the middle of this parak was that he was concerned of the safety of others. That he knew that if he would be in Yerushalayim, he probably would be untouchable. He'd probably have enough security. But Avshalom was such a crazy person. Avshalom, we saw already, he burned down someone's field for no good reason. And he's probably going to just kill innocent civilians, which unfortunately we're pretty familiar with.
That's fair to say, because he had waited patiently for the wind to come around. He waited for so many years for the wind to come. He didn't just explode. He waited before he killed his brother, and he waited before he did whatever he did. Isn't that crazy? I think that the wind lost faith. David felt guilty, and he was out of things. He was not acting as a king. He just picked up and ran away. He was not thinking.
I'm not disagreeing that that certainly is true. If we look on page 300, Pasuk Yud Dalet, I think that may answer the question. Now let me just read it in the English, verse 14. David then said to all of his servants who were with him in Yerushalayim, "Arise, let us flee, for there will be no escape for us before Avshalom. Hurry to leave, lest he hurry and catch up to us and thrust evil upon us and smite the city by the blade of the sword." Which it sounds like that if he stayed, he would have killed and destroyed the whole city. And we saw the Radak over there that said that it's an interesting language of a Hisiganu, which is like the language of a Hidiach, which is that a city of majority idol worshippers, that the city is completely destroyed. So David was afraid that maybe Hashem will just destroy all of Yerushalayim. There's also the idea of Hishtadlus. He has to put in some effort, right? So you have to know that balance. But anyway, so that's how this is interpreted. And if you just, we can just conclude on page 307, we can say the English, Hushai Re'a David, actually on the bottom left, on in English, clearly Hushai was a wise and respected sage. Now David asked him to pose as a legal subject of Shalom so that he could neutralize the counsel of Achitophel. And then if you look in the English over here, when it says friend, here in the next two chapters, Hushai is referred to 10 times as David's friend. Apparently they have been especially close for some time. The Barbanel suggests that the word Re'a means more than a friend. It is a kind of title or rank signifying a warm and trusting relationship. So,
I don't think Avshalom would question why all of a sudden he's coming over.
Well, he was an old man.
I mean, there were other people there too, so you know, he's not going to always question the motivation. Most people would probably just say, you know what, I don't want to get involved. If you have one king or the other king, I'm not going to start up and rebel.
Achitophel was also an old friend of
how could he trust
Achitophel
when he left his
Avshalom saw, look, I have Achitophel now, I have Achitophel.
He was the horse,
Okay, so that concludes the chapter, and we will see next week, next time a little bit more and see how this unfolds of David once again running away from Avshalom.